Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Yeah, I don't want to hear Christmas music right now. I'm not in the mood for it. Yeah, Elvis. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see? Elvis, he was another fool. Joining me is Jeff Kenny, somebody who's not a fool. How about that for a decent introduction?
Thank you very much.
It's a pretty high endorsement, man, and a pretty low bar to get over.
Yeah, I'm suspicious now.
There you go. Are you an Elvis guy?
I wouldn't say that. I like some of his songs. I actually admire him, his early year, and it's really in comparison admiration because he got drafted and he went. Unlike now that we have it all there on tour, none of these people hardly ever feel the need to pony up for the USA. You know, none of the entertainers. But he did. He went and did his thing as a tank driver in Germany for 3 years or so and came back with a 15-year-old wife. So more power to him.
What the hell? Yeah, that was the trap he was just talking about being in. Look, I've been in traps before, but none of them involved somebody that looked like Priscilla Presley, okay? So.
Who would have thought she'd later go on to be the heroine of Naked Gun?
Exactly. Exactly. We knew her as a 15-year-old. What about Jeff Kennedy, Colonel, United States Marine Corps retired, infantry guy. You've heard him the last couple weeks. Been to Liberia a few times. Been to Iraq, been to Afghanistan. Breaking news in the last 24 hours. Give me your thoughts on the president's announcement that the United States would be withdrawing from Syria, and the silence of John Bolton, James Mattis, and Joe Dunford. Not a fucking peep out of any of the three of them.
I know it. And according to the news, such as it is, that no other military general officer, any of the services that they know, you know, who will talk to them, are agreeing with this, which makes me think maybe there's something good about it if they don't like it. But on the other hand, my gut is that it seems like a hasty thing and not a good thing. My gut tells me. I don't think I agree with it. Because I'll tell you, there's only 2,000 people in there. Right. And they, a lot of them in the advisor capability, a lot of it is like isolated RD units and stuff and enablers basically that support the basic light infantry battle that's going on there between the Kurds and anti-ISIS Iraqi forces who aren't with the government that I guess we're supporting. And so it seems like a small investment for a pretty big payback. I know that some of the other things we have overseas, like in Afghanistan, we have all this huge tail that goes with like the Resolute Support. There's all these civilians up there in Kabul. There's 8 essential functions. It's just all of them. I mean, I'd say 90% of them could drop dead tomorrow and nobody would know the difference. But these 2,000, I think, are actually making a difference. And I just don't know. It just seems ill-advised to me.
Ill-advised. I like the way I like the way you say that.
I don't know if they're surprised by it. Like, it might be the president's frustrated because it's, you know, he's really been let down, I think, by the particularly the Republican Congress and the House of Representatives. But one thing he got elected on, one of the main reasons I voted for him, was that wall, was that the idea that we're gonna have a real border and we're gonna let people in, but we're gonna have a say in it. And and that just seems to not happen. Even with folks on the other side who had previously been for, you know, a barrier that that would control entry, you know, ports of entry into the United States, and they just seem to like having this lawless thing on the border. And Otherwise, they get together. I've heard General Kelly say this, lecture Congress. And General Kelly spent a lot of time in the halls of Congress, you know, his jobs through the time. So he knows. He's not like a military guy who just got plopped into D.C. by any means, as you know. And he said, look, if you guys don't like this, then get together and pass a law saying that if you cross the Mexican border, no matter where you came from, you're good to go. But they won't. Although, you know what I'm saying, they won't do that, and they seem to like this.
How does that make sense? I mean,
it doesn't, and
the people that now won't vote to fund it are the same right. people that voted like 3 years ago and 6 years ago to spend $20 billion on yeah. a wall or whatever. And you'd look at it and you look at it and say, you know what? And my daughter, who's mm-hmm. more liberal than I. Arguing with me, she goes, it just doesn't make sense. I said, okay, sit down and we'll compromise, okay? Let me give you a compromise solution to this, Catherine. And she just stared at me. I said, the border has to be secured, okay? The process of coming to this country has to be orderly, okay, mm-hmm. for a lot of different reasons. And we could talk about that, but that's not the purpose of this discussion right now.
Right.
So she rolls her eyes. So that's the first thing. Okay, and then we're going to deal with the 11 million people that are in the country.
Okay? Right.
And so, look, we don't have enough buses to deport them. Okay, so that ain't happening. I don't give a shit what Anna Coulter says, okay? So mm-hmm. the dreamers that got brought here and were born, we will give them a pathway to citizenship. Okay? And they're going to have to go through certain wickets and they can become citizens. Okay? Their parents will plead guilty to some kind of high misdemeanor, and they will have legal status here. Not voting status, but they'll have mm-hmm. legal. And because we as a nation need to move beyond this shit. But we're right. never going to move on beyond this shit if we're just going to do it again in another 5 years for another yeah. 11 million people. So yeah. I can't deal with them and their parents and make all this shit go away. And again, I'll give. I'll compromise. And all this bullshit from Rush Limbaugh. The first act of coming to this country can't be a crime. Yeah, I got it. Shut up. Take your Viagra. Go away, okay? We're interested in compromise politics. And as much as this may sour in your mouth, we're not going to deport 11 million people. It ain't happening. And so she just looked at me and she goes, well, that was surprisingly enlightening coming from you. And
yeah.
I said, look, I'm
they
not.
They came up here on their own.
I'm not, look.
Imported themselves on their own. And if they weren't, and the reason they did is for opportunities for jobs and stuff.
Right.
And so if that was blocked, if you had to prove you're here legally in order to be employed, and if you didn't, your employer got in trouble, then they would walk away because there'd be no reason to be here, or at least large numbers of them would.
I don't believe.
Yet we don't do that.
I don't believe. First of all, I don't believe we'd ever do that, and I question whether they would walk away if we would do that.
Being here, then why would they stay? Like, they couldn't get a job.
Look, if you and I were in Mexico or in Honduras, where would we be?
Well, I go to the consulate and I get a visa and say,
no.
Hey, look,
no,
you let me in. I'll join the Marine Corps, I'll join the Army, and I'll serve the nation, and I'll be
right.
a good American,
right.
I'll learn about George Washington.
I'd be right
they
behind.
When they come in, a lot of them are carrying dope.
I'd be right behind you.
The whole border's controlled. Well, excuse me, the whole border's controlled by these cartels. They decide who comes in, who doesn't.
That might be an overstatement, but
yeah.
there is an element of that involved in it. And I would be right behind you in line at the consulate, and they would tell us to
yeah.
go the fuck away, right? And we would walk outside, and I'd look at you, and since you've been standing in line for 4 hours together, and I'd say, hey, Jeffro, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do now? Hey, these bastards aren't keeping me out. I'm not going back to Honduras like a punk. Come on, Mac, let's go. And we'd find a back door in, and that's what we'd do. And so again, all I'm saying is that this is an issue the nation's got to deal with, right? And we need to get beyond it. And the way you're going to get beyond it is both sides got to be pissed off at the end state of the deal, right? Over out of my cold dead hand. Okay, if that's
yeah.
what you want it. So it's got to piss off both sides, and then, but it would allow us as a nation to get beyond this shit, man. Get beyond this shit.
So, yeah, we got bigger problems even than that.
I agree. That sucks the air out of the room. And again, I heard somebody say this morning that the president's trying to free up revenue to use on the border. And if there's any linkage between those two issues, I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I don't think that, and I think that was the good thing about how we were doing Syria. We weren't investing. There just wasn't that much going in. I mean, you know what really costs is when you put troops in, and then, of course, you don't want them to suffer. So there has to be a dining facility, and there has to be, you know, air-conditioned the cans and stuff like that. Yeah. And but the way we're doing it out there, and actually the way we're doing it for the guys in Southwest, there's a minimal of that stuff. So when it comes to that, we're not really expending a lot of money. I don't know if you'd recoup enough to make a difference. Certainly not $5 billion worth for those 2,000. I mean, I just don't – unless we're talking, the cost of operating the high-tech surveillance and the fires capabilities we have. Because, now it used to be pretty cheap to drop, like, a B-52 full of 500-pounders on somebody.
Right.
Now, one bomb that's precision-guided or a Hellfire or something like that costs more than all those bombs put together. So it's like, even though it's more accurate and, ostensibly we're killing less innocent people, it's costly. And every empire that ever was always in the red or always in the black like we are, or in the red like we are, eventually goes belly up. The good thing about the Brits and the Romans, they're in the black. And if they weren't in the black, they didn't do it. And so, they had a very minimalist approach. And eventually when they got away from that, they got slammed. I mean, Caesar went into Gaul with, like 8 legions, and we're talking not even 30,000 guys. And by the time Rome fell, the bureaucracy they had, civilian bureaucracy running those provinces, was crippling. Eventually, it just collapsed, A lot of reasons Roman Empire fell. That's a big one, though. They just ran out of fucking money.
Talk to me about the other piece in Syria, is that you do all the fighting to win the peace.
Right.
And we suck at phase 4. And that is, and you sit there and watch it, and it's like, well, we've defeated them. Okay, so that is one of the preconditions to get what we want there.
Right.
That's not when you leave. That's when you now, okay, State Department guys, other people, get in here and let's fucking get what was our vision? Our vision was not only to eject them from the region, but to have some form of stable event going on there.
See, I don't agree about that. I don't care about their stability.
What do you care about?
We went into all this stuff was because in 9/11, they murdered 3,000 people because of this insane Islamic fundamentalist belief, and that's what ISIS is. ISIS is just the grandson of Al Qaeda. That's
right,
all it is.
Right.
And after ISIS, there'll be another one that pops up until we root. Everywhere it is, we got to fight it.
So your deal would be fight it and leave?
Yes.
Okay.
It and leave them. And so like Sherman said about George, I'm going to make it so Crow has to take his lunch to fly across the place.
And again, Zinni said that. He said, look, why we, and I just mentioned it last hour, the Colin Powell Pottery Barn School of Foreign Policy. You break it, you break it, you own it. Why do we do that?
You're right. Well, a lot of military guys I respect, even me for a long time, they just got no respect for money. They always think there's plenty of it. I'm an American. As a matter of fact, they're super generous. They come across as way more generous than they'd be if they're giving their money out of their own paycheck. But, you've seen it over in Iraq and Afghanistan and everywhere we go. They're always willing to pony up government money. Oh, yeah, we can do this. We can do that. We can help you. We'll build this. We'll build that. And they think they're good because of that. You're not good when you give away somebody else's shit. You're only good when you give away your own stuff. And, it's just ridiculous. When I was there in 2009 in Afghanistan when President Obama, the enlightened one, and General McChrystal, another self-appointed guru of genius.
Another
decided that finally after
McChrystal,
pretty much U.S. forces ignored the Afghans until 2009, especially the Army. They wanted to carve the little battle spaces, you know, so that you get your fucking your Bronze Star automatically, and and if you're the colonel, you get a Legion of Merit, and everybody's happy, and the war goes on and on and on, and we just make more insurgents because we're everywhere, and so these guys decide now we're going to partner in 2009, and the only good thing that was going on was the fact that the Afghans didn't have they weren't partnered, they could do what the hell they wanted. And so if the advisor was good, he could influence the Afghans to get out there and fight. Once that happened, then we got all the army rules. There's got to be at least five people. There will be at least five MRAPs before you can go outside the wire.
And a mine roller.
Don't have any MRAPs.
A mine
not going.
A mine roller has to lead.
Yeah. And it's like Muhammad Ali was pretty much a retard. I mean, that's why he didn't get drafted at first,
what?
Because he was a Cat 4. Like,
you
know, he's not qualified for enlistment. But we needed guys, and they went down to letting Cat 4s in.
You're talking about American Hero.
But he said this. I don't want to change the subject. But he said a smart thing. He said, if you want to get some ass, you got to bring your ass. And that's the truth. If you want to win, you know, one of these things, you're going to have to get in there and slug it out at some point. I'm not saying every battle's got to be like the Somme, where you get standing up and losing 20,000 guys in a day. But you got to be willing to, you know, get in there and get dirty. And we're not.
We like to do it from the fringe and make sure that it's not too messy, because we can't have that video coming back to the United States. That'll ruin everything.
It was like we were talking about last week. The reason I want a lot of guys is because, they just didn't want to go into the people cost money.
Right.
And so when we started losing folks, their answer was is to make the Humvee invulnerable.
Right.
And then make the man invulnerable. Pile all this porcelain onto him and heavy-duty, PPE, personal protective stuff, so that if you're in the Marine Corps now or in the Army now and you're out there for a year or a couple pumps, even if you don't get hit, you will never be the same. You from carrying that shit and sweating your ass off. If you're wearing that stuff, it's like 10 times worse than the shit they carried in Vietnam, and they carried too much in Vietnam. Now, granted, we're not that those guys had it way worse. They suffered more, deprivation and worse, adversity. But
the weather conditions, especially in the northern part of I Corps. When you read those battles, going up and down mountains looking for the regular NVA army, that was a man's event, straight up stud event.
Yes, and I mean not being resupplied and almost being barefoot.
Right.
You'd think it was the Army of Northern Virginia, like in 1864, not U.S. Marine Corps and U.S. Army formations up there along the DMZ and those fights between Khon Tien and Khe Sanh. But now, in our zeal to make it so that you won't get hurt when you get hit, they make it more likely that you'll get hit. Because you're in a Humvee that sticks out like a dog's balls. A Humvee or an MRAP. And then they try to make it invulnerable. There's no way. And then when you get out of that thing, you look like an astronaut walking on the moon with the shit you're wearing. And they make it more like, I remember General Zinni and General Christmas. Remember that big argument they had about flaks and helmets?
Right. That's awesome. That's a great argument. Let me bottom line, then I want to transition. Email says, so bottom line, what do both of you make out of the silence coming from John Bolton, Joe Dunford, and Jim Mattis? What do you make of it?
Let me go first.
Yeah. I can rebut you.
Yeah, I think they don't agree, and they're probably furiously lobbying him privately. I mean, Bolton works right there in the same building as the president, So I would assume that. And that right now there's the president's mind can be changed. I mean, he's changed his mind on a couple things. Sometimes to the good, sometimes not to the good.
It's like a chick.
With
all respect due to all you chicks out there, but he changed his mind like a woman does, putting on clothes.
Yeah.
What for the last 3 weeks? It's I'm going to shut the government down, right?
Right
now, maybe not.
I think he should shut it down and close the border. You know, he plays some poker, man.
Make it hurt. You know?
Yeah, what could hurt? I mean, how could it hurt any worse than it does now? You know, it's like, and you know, here's the other thing. These people know that they're afraid down south of the border and all the people who want to get in here to do, like you said, you know, like the Hondurans and so forth. They're rushing now because they're thinking, you know, that the door might end up being closed. And now get in while the getting's good.
Right.
So that tells me, you know, he's having an effect. But right now, the effect is bad because we're not stopping them. They're charging, and they're not being stopped. If we sealed this thing for a length of time that they couldn't stand, it's like the surge. We broke the heart of Al Qaeda in Iraq because just when they thought they had us, you know, where we were going to get ready to pull out, Americans.
Stop showing your ADHD to everybody, okay?
If we shut this thing, and like, you know, if the president, here's the thing, if the president shows courage of his convictions, I think it'll be to the good.
Right.
So,
right.
I think the reason there's silence, to get back to your original thing, the reason there's silence on this is because that's what's, they're either getting a hold of him or, when you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. And if we get told, you know, something by our commander in the Marine Corps, you just shut up and do what he tells you after a while. You don't agree with it, you still do it, you know? I think that's where we're at.
Right. I agree with it. That's what I said in the first hour. The reason you haven't heard anything is because they are hoping that they can change his mind. The question, the interesting question will be, this is a huge change of American policy. Up to, including last weekend and the weekend, you heard the most senior people in the administration saying that that we will be there for as long as Iran is going to be there. And that was Bolton. That was our envoy to that. And all of a sudden, the president flips it upside down. So I'd be curious, anybody going to resign over this? Anybody who's going to look at it and say, this is so wrong. We have worked so hard to get this thing stabilized, right? And we at least have a say in it, right?
Yeah.
Now we're going to give all that up, and we didn't even negotiate it. He just declared it.
Yeah,
so it'll be
the other thing too. I think
it'll be interesting to see.
You know, you don't really know everything that's going on,
right?
But I think the president is like he doesn't have a unified support there in the not even in the White House, let alone in DOD and DOS. There's a lot of people who actively work against him, I think.
Right.
And it's got to be discouraging. You know what I mean? It's you can't do even things that people agree on. You can't do it because they hate you so much. They don't want to even put that aside just for the good of the country.
Yeah, but what I would say, yes and no, in that, okay, but when I sit down and talk to the grown-ups, and I would include Dunford, Mattis, Kelly used to be in there as a grown-up. I mean, they have been around. They fought for the country. They understand it. And they'll look you straight in the face and tell you the truth no matter what. When those people are telling you something, and then for politics' sake, it doesn't make sense. And I agree that there's, I hate, you know, I heard all this deep state bullshit, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't want to believe it. And then if you've watched the stories that have come out, the text between FBI agents, the conduct of the FBI. Yep. If you've watched all this, you're sitting there thinking, holy shit, there is truth to some of that. And that some of these people aren't just public servants who say, I'm going to leave now. They put their hand on the scale. And and that's been probably most astounding to watch, it that the FBI has lost its way. I would say the two communities in the United States have lost their way. Special operations community, right? And I just saw an article last week saying that very high level general officers were going to form a task force to look into what's going. I'd say be careful there, boys and girls, right?
Yep.
And you might want to bring some blinders on and put some earplugs in, because when you start flipping rocks in that thing, you're going to find some shit that you don't want to find. And
I agree 100%.
And then the
special ops.
Yep. Go ahead.
Usually, And you're right. It's very similar to the FBI because a lot of their stuff is just based on a lot of their, you know, their power really comes from the belief in their competence by the American population.
Right.
And they have proven again and again that they're not that competent.
They're not worthy of that kind of blind trust.
Yeah.
Like everybody else. Super.
And then it's compounded by dishonesty. Like, if you read the history of the FBI, when the FBI really became, you know, a law enforcement agency with teeth to it, was probably when they got the permission to carry firearms.
Right.
And immediately when they got that permission to go out, and they're going after the bank robbers in the Midwest, the main, you know, they fucked up left, right, and center. They shot each other. They shot innocent people. They fell out of buildings and stuff. They finally had to go and hire these old West guys, you know, these guys in their 50s, to teach them how to do gunfights. And what they usually did, their first instinct, starting with J. Edgar Hoover and pretty much all the way through, is to hide the truth. And that's something they have in common with the special forces community. I mean, when I was in Iraq, it was a big thing, and the guys who were advisors. I remember this guy who was an advisor out there in, you know, that area they call the Jazeera area between,
yeah.
Ramadi and like, Heat.
Right.
It's like a marshy area, you know.
Yeah.
The SEAL guy had dropped his own hand grenade and blew up and wounded himself. But the Iraqis are the ones, because they were advising the Iraquis too, of course, you know.
Right.
And, the Iraqis are like, hey, this guy blew us up with his own hand grenade, and they're like, get a purple heart and a silver star.
Of course. Come on.
And it's like, you know, yeah, it's like when they became an entity unto themselves, when they, you know, Goldwater Nichols, establishment of, you know, the whole idea of the way we do stuff now, and they established the Special Operations Command. I think that's when that happened.
Right.
Like in the late 80s.
Right.
They immediately, a lot of the legal problems went away, because they're always getting investigated before that, Mac, about misappropriation of funds and blah, blah, blah. A lot of that stuff went away when they became a law unto themselves.
Yeah.
And it has to really be egregious for it to come out now.
But before that,
not only did it come out about that, but like fuck-ups left, right, and center. The Desert One thing, you know, the trying to rescue the hostages. I can't fault them for trying. But there's a lot of bald fuck-ups on that thing. The SEALs in Panama, where half of them got wiped out by two, they're trying to knock out Noriega's jet. Two Colombian mercenaries wiped them out. Killed like six of them.
With a machine gun, because they got online and walked up the fucking tarmac.
Yeah.
They came to IOC after that to learn how to shoot mortars. And so all these dudes roll in with their Varnays and, you know, calling each other, hey, I'm Larry. I'm Captain McNamara. Hey, what's up? What's up, man?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what are you guys doing here?
Grenada.
Well, yeah.
Half of them drowned.
We need to learn how to shoot mortars.
How can a SEAL drown?
I don't know.
That's the whole thing.
Yeah, no, and it was this conversation. They told us what they did, and we were sitting there, and it's like, hey, look, man, I know you guys, but why would you get online on a flat surface, and why wouldn't you move tactically there?
Yeah.
Like,
why would you get within 100 yards crawling and shoot a law into the thing?
Yeah, what you get accused of when you say these things is, oh, you're one of those SEAL haters. No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
Well,
I just worked with them and I formed an opinion based on my experiences working with them in Iraq and Afghanistan. And
the biggest
fuck ups we've had are with United States Navy SEALs. Because they're arrogant and they're bad. They're bad operational decision makers, and they get people killed. And so I'm not a hater for no reason. I hate for reason.
I'll tell you who I like. I like these Delta guys, and I generally like the Green Beret dudes.
Yeah.
You know, the ones I work with, they're pretty. They just want to get the job done.
Right. You want to know what I think the difference is, and I know there's this isn't entirely true, but I think it's predominantly true. Army Special Forces have a pipeline that comes out of Army ground combat units, which means you got to be a soldier first. And when you go become a SEAL, right, you go right into the SEAL pipeline. You're a special person from the get-go. And I think that's bad. I think it serves the Navy poorly. The Navy ought to pull out of the ranks of sailors, and you got to be able to, you got to go be a good sailor. You got to go serve, and then you go that path. And I think that fucks up the
You know, maybe, yeah, you're right. You know, and maybe the way to go is to go even more that way. There is, when you join the Special Operations Command, you're not a SEAL, you're not a Marine MARSOC guy, you're not a special, you're not a Green Beret. You're a Special Operations Commando. And there ain't, you know, they got their own way. They can all call each other Larry and Mo and Curly and
stuff.
And, you know, but they just disappear into that, right. The essence of, you know, badasses or whatever you want to call it. But,
something.
Yeah. And then, but you're right. I'll tell you, the lack of appreciation for people who never were in regular units is exactly that. They don't really have an appreciation for combined arms. They don't have appreciation for, you know, the use of support, logistics. They think it's all, you know, kicking in doors, which really, when you get down to it, until, you know, it's really the easiest thing to practice.
Oh, my God. Let me tell you. And this is another, I get accused of being a hater. Oh, you're one of them. It's like, look, if you could see the assets they have to find a target, to watch a target, and then to go hit a target, it's ridiculous. And when you see them taking casualties, right, and you read that they got into big contact, that means they had their heads so far up their asses.
Yes.
It's stupid.
Like in the Korngal.
If you go, like, how did those guys get surprised? They park drones, both electronic warfare and camera drones, over these places and watch them for as long as they want to watch until they decide that they're going to hit it.
Yeah.
And then they go in and they get in this huge gunfight. They got into one where in Somalia they lost a guy. You know, a platoon of Marines had to go in. Something got shot down. An Osprey got whacked, right? And it's like, I don't know what happened there, but somebody.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Yeah, hold on. We were supposed to talk about Afghanistan, man. You're fucking this up again.
I'm sorry. Let me tell you about. I went in there in 2009 as a brigade advisor team leader into RC East. Which, for me, the part of RC East that I was in, our battle space for the Iraqi brigade I was with, it was the 2nd Brigade of the 201st Corps, was it had Nangarhar Province, Laghman, which is just north of Nangarhar, Kunar, and Nuristan. And the thing about Nangarhar that's notable, number one, Jalalabad is in Nangarhar, it's the capital, and it has a huge airstrip. JAF, the Army had, that was where their headquarters was for the Army Brigade that owned that battle space. Also, Nangarhar Province has the Khyber Pass. On the Afghan side, that's known as Torkham Gate. So there's a lot of, it's highly mountainous. All four provinces are very mountainous. Kunar, in Kunar Province, is where the Korangal Valley is. It's where Ganjigal, where the Marines, those guys are actually advisors in my brigade who got killed at Ganjigal, where Meyer got the Medal of Honor.
Right.
And but it's a highly, it's like even more mountainous than like the Rockies in Montana and stuff in some areas. Very rugged terrain. And a beautiful place, by the way, also. But you had your seasons there too, you know, so it was different than being down there in Helmand. And that,
it wasn't very, pretty flat. It looked like 29 Palms. So let me ask, so Afghanistan. How many wars are going on right now in Afghanistan? I've seen it explained, very basic explanation. There's a United States special operations war against Al-Qaeda and ISIS that are attempting to have a presence in Afghanistan. That's one war. A separate war in a separate bag is the American support of the federal government of Afghanistan.
Right, Jarrah.
Yeah, Jarrah, and their development of their military and their civilian institutions to try to be something they've never been in the history of the nation, which is a national government. Explain how you see the war. Is that relatively accurate or not?
It is. It's very accurate, as a matter of fact. And the because the another huge factor in Afghanistan, though, is the ethnic makeup of the country drives much of their internal politics. So the biggest population they have there are the Pashtun people. And the Pashtun basically straddle the east and southern part of Afghanistan and the northern and western part of Pakistan. And they're on both sides of the border, and they really don't see that border in a lot of cases. The next biggest ethnic group are the Tajiks. Like, for instance, Masood, wherever you go in Afghanistan, you see a picture on the wall of Massoud. He was the guy who was killed by Osama bin Laden right before 9/11, if you remember that, who had been a big, very highly successful Mujahideen commander against the Russians. Those Tajiks, they kind of are intermixed in the northeastern part of Afghanistan with the Tajiks or with the Pashtuns, but those are two biggest ethnic groups. Then you have a group called the Hazaras, and they're like the Hazaras look like Koreans. They look like East Asian people, and the theory is that they're descended from the Mongols when they invaded Afghanistan.
Right.
That's also they're a pretty big group, but and they're also the only Shia group in the whole country. Then you have your Uzbeks and your Kazakhs and other types, but every formation that the Afghans put together has to have elements of every ethnic group, and they are faithful to that. So, for instance, if you have a Pashtun brigade commander, then the XO is probably going to be a Tajik, and the operations officer is probably going to be a Hazara. And they really try it. It's almost like math. And at first I thought, wow, that's pretty good, but it isn't good. Like most things in Afghanistan, if you look at it, most of it's bad. If you see something good and then you scratch at it, you find out that even that's bad under the surface. And so it's hard for them to establish discipline because the normal chain of command isn't really followed. It's very frustrating to be an advisor working with that.
So if I'm a Hazar, I go to the Hazar guy.
Yeah, that's very – and the other thing too is there's a lot of corporal punishment between officers. I mean, I saw that my first tour there.
Like what do you mean? What is that?
Well, I mean if you're a lieutenant, that's a breedman, okay, and you piss off your Kandak commander, right? Mm-hmm. He'd be a Degerman. That's like a lieutenant colonel.
What's a explain to everybody what a Kandak is.
A Kandak's a battalion.
Okay.
And he'd beat you.
Like how?
And maybe right out in public. Unless
with one of those little sticks, for God's sake.
No, with his fist, probably.
Oh, really?
And, they were vicious that way.
Would
it was not unusual.
Would it hurt me?
Oh man, I mean the stuff these guys did, they have, like you said, it's a brand new organization. And they just do things the way they're brought up. I remember the battalion commander, the Kandak commander of the outfit there in Ganjigal that got overrun during a KLE in September of 2009, and that's where those three Marines and Corpsmen were killed from that team. That guy was
hold on. KLE is a
key leader engagement, like a meeting between villagers and military folks.
Okay.
And there's the army FOB there. The Afghan army FOB was on what we call Joyce, FOB Joyce. There's an army unit there too, U.S. Army. It was maybe 3 miles from the Pakistan border, very rugged mountainous area. And about halfway between Joyce and the border was this little town called Ganjigal, and it was bad place. Highly anti-American, anti-Jaroa. And so they went in there to have a KLE, and they weren't very well supported, even though they had been promised both RD and air support when they went in. Because it was a KLE, it's hard to explain all this stuff because it's so convoluted the way we do things. But do you remember when you did an operation there, you had a level one, a level zero CONOPS and a level one CONOPS, and those are the ones you didn't have to get a general's permission on.
Right.
If you remember, I mean, I'm being general here, but
there were certain parameters under which you had to get certain permissions at certain levels.
And changed around that time because that's when, they started changing the rules of engagement in a big way. And one of the things that changed was you had to have a level two CONOPS and above to use air or to have air, even in a, like a, you know, a contingency type thing, if you're talking about a built-up area. And technically, they thought Ganjigal is a built-up area. So the air that was supposed to go to that, they did a level zero, level one comps, and you kind of had an under-the-table agreement that if we get into shit, you guys will show up. And because you had a lot of operations going on in that area at the same time, matter of fact, there's an operation going on at that exact time, maybe 5-6 miles away. That's where the Korngal Valley is.
Right.
And it intersects with another valley called the Pesh Valley. And both of these places are very kinetic, you know,
right.
And actually more so than the borders. So no one really expected this thing at Ganjigal to be that bad. But it turned into like the Afghan version of Little Bighorn for those guys who went in there. And
let me guess, when they went to call air, it was already working for somebody else in the Korngal Valley or someplace else.
Yes, yes.
And they didn't get it, and people got killed.
Now, the guy who won the battle space, the battalion level thing, it was a mountain battalion, and the battalion commander was on leave in the States. His XO, I think, was confused about the rules, would not even authorize RD or mortars to fire in support of these guys.
Yeah.
And I mean... And so when you did that to the Afghans, this is my experience, when you called in stuff, they usually backed off because it was almost like it was honorable to back off when the Americans started using their magic stuff that would fall out of the sky. But nothing happened. So they swarmed them, and they killed my numbers might be a while back, but the Afghan police lost 8 guys, I think. The ANA there lost 12 KIA. And then the 3 Marines and the corpsman, it was Lieutenant Johnson, Gunny Johnson, Doc Landy, and Staff Sergeant Kennefec, all killed in this little gulchy area there. And then at least 3 or 4 other members of that team, I'd say 5 or 6 members of that team were wounded, including the team leader. And the senior enlisted guy. And, you know, it was pretty much a shitty situation. I got there after about 2 hours. They flew me and the brigade commander in, along with the Army brigade commander, you know, who was headquarters at JAF right across the road from us. And, you know, it was a disastrous thing. But it was because of that, because of confusion over the rules of engagement and, you know, and the use of and hesitancy to use supporting arms. And, you know, Bing West, like, wrote a book about it and everything. There's a lot of...
No, it's eerily familiar with the Dakota Myers thing.
Yeah.
And, it's almost the same kind of event where it's loosely put together. They get surprised.
Well, this is the Meyer incident I'm talking about.
I had everybody read that.
Yeah.
And I said, this will never, ever happen. All right? Ever. So... You know, here's the requirement, but it's just frustrating. I want to stop now. Back away. So in Afghanistan, we have these two fights going on today.
Right.
All right. We've tried to reduce our footprint in the country, both financially and militarily, but yet still provide enabling support. As opposed to disabling support. So I want to talk about, you get your thoughts on enabling versus disabling support in the fight, where we support, GROA, the government of Afghanistan, against the Taliban. Do you buy that, disabling support as opposed to enabling support, and can you explain it?
Well, I would assume that disabling is like kind of what I described. We have these army guys who smothered the Afghans, and they didn't do anything because basically the Americans are doing it for them. And that's bad.
Right.
Because it won't last. And, well, what a surprise. When we pulled out of there in 2014 or whatever, Helmand Province lost everything except for the capital, Lashkargah. And so enabling is you have a few advisors who go with these guys, and you support them with ISR, with drones and intelligence and satellite support, and you have a few advisors with them. If you have advisors with them who go out with them when they get in combat operations, we will win. If we don't, we will lose. To me, it's that simple. And, like, they've been doing pretty successful things with this non-company advising stuff. They're in Task Force Southwest right now.
Right.
They're in Helmand.
Right.
But it's hard to get them to exploit their wins when they like, they retook Garmsir and they retook Goresh. They retook Marja, you know.
Right.
But it's hard for them to hold on to stuff because, you know, their main enemy is their corruption.
Got it.
It's just, but they will not be corrupt, and they won't let this, you know, descend to a level that's crippling militarily if there's an American Marine with them.
Okay, let's talk about the corruption. The corruption is money. Okay, so
yeah.
So when we talk about the eradication of Poppy,
right.
If Jeff has the money to pay off the police chief, his Poppy's not going to get whacked. If
right.
Mac, whose field is across the road from Jeff's, doesn't have the money, so what's going to happen is they'll drive a tractor through Jeff's field.
Yes.
The Poppy lays down, the Poppy pops up. Mac's
right.
field, though, is going to get all these little police officers and other people that are going to get paid, and they're going to have little sticks, and they're going to walk through there, and they're going to whack every bulb and whack it open and drain it and destroy the Poppy crop.
Yeah.
So there's a system of, we would call it bribes, but I don't think it's any different on the New Jersey shorefront. If you want to get something, you know, to market, I don't think it's any different on the southern border. If you want to get, you got to pay certain people. So the level of corruption, and I had John Allen on and I was asking him, I said, nothing, like, we want them to grow wheat. Nothing throws off the money that opium throws off. So
right.
He said, well, Mac, pomegranate does. And I said,
no.
Okay. Are we going to pay them to grow pomegranate for the 5 years it's going to take for a tree to mature so that
right.
he can replace his income? Are we going to replace his income? Well, no.
Yeah, no.
Well, then how the fuck do we expect them to go do this shit?
That's right, and that's what I'm getting at. I mean, functionally, what I describe is how you can win. But you got to ask yourself, in light of what you just said about the pot, they're not going to stop selling poppy. They're not going to stop that. It grows easy there. Everything else in Helmand Province grows like shit. And they tried that pomegranate stuff before. They tried all this stuff. You should read the book, Little America, you know. It goes bad. It doesn't last. It just what grows best there is poppy, and they get more money out of it. What we got to ask ourselves is it worth it? Is this thing worth it for us to send guys in there like I just described and to fight with these dope dealers, you know, one dope deal inside against the other? What do we get out of it?
Right.
What's the, you know, is it worth the ultimate price? What's success? Is it our dope dealers run Afghanistan? Is that it? And what do you do? I mean, we're paying people. That a lot of that dope ends up in England and Europe, and some of it even here.
Right.
And it's insane when you start thinking about why are we doing this, really? You know.
Got it. Well, let me tell you the reason. So let me ask you for a way out.
All
so
right.
One, you think the assessment of there's two fights going on. One is a strategic fight between denying the Afghanistan as a place of sanctuary and a place to launch attacks for Al-Qaeda and ISIS there, our special ops guys against those guys. Second fight is the Jirua against the Taliban fight. We support the Jirua. Given our contribution of American lives in that country,
mm-hmm.
given the Taliban not going away,
right.
How does this end? In any way, shape, or form that would be either neutral or at least stable, right, relative to American interests?
Yeah, I think first thing to do is get rid of Resolute Support. The whole idea about they're so dumb and so bad, we're going to show them how to – the eight functions where we're going to take all the rule of law, you know, justice, all this stuff. We're going to teach them how to do it, like ours is so great. Right.
Right,
and then then we're going to, once they got it going, then we're going to leave in some open-ended commitment where the money never stops pouring into this place. That's got to stop. We need to say, look, you got 18 months, and in those 18 months, we're going to help you fight this thing. But then you're on your own and really mean it. And then whatever happens, happens. They want to divide up into three countries, that's on them, you know? But
now, is that what President Obama did when he took us out of there? Did we not do pieces of that?
No, he's the one who did Resolute Support. He basically just took a lot of military out, and then he said, "Okay, we're going to set up." Resolute Support was not a Trump initiative. That was an Obama initiative.
Right. I know, but he also took us out of there.
He took most of the guys.
Most of the guys out of there.
Right, and then they lost. So, but what does that tell you? They outnumber the enemy. They outgun the enemy. They have all the supporting arms. They have their own air. These guys don't have shit that's the enemy there, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, compared to them.
Okay, so the logical question is, then how do they keep getting their asses thumped?
Because the other guys want it more.
Okay, give me a way out of this thing.
You can't. The way out of it is to just get out.
Just to leave.
Look, you got 18, we're going to help you. And if you can't handle it after this, goodbye. Otherwise, what's the alternative? Forever? Forever? And when does it stop? So we're forever in Afghanistan? We're forever in Iraq? A lot of people want us to be forever in Syria? What is it? Everywhere? I mean, you can be in a lot of different places in a measured way to help people who are conducive to, you know, United States interests.
Right.
However,
that's not what
you
we're
know,
talking
owning
about.
I think we're spending more money in Afghanistan than we are for sure than we are for like border security. Absolutely for sure.
Right, without a doubt.
And I mean, it's like I don't mind, and here's, you know, I don't mind the adventure of going overseas and fighting, but you just can't keep shelling out this money, you know, and expect these people to just become Americans. First of all, you know, it's like they don't want to do our thing. You know, they don't want to. Here we go, the clock. They don't want to be Americans. You know, and it just seems crazy to me. You know, when you're talking about influencing other countries, less is more. The idea they had when they first came up with the special forces in the 50s was a good one, and the whole idea was economics. These 12 guys are going to go in, and they're very self-sufficient, they're tough, they can handle things, they're smart, they're all experts in their field, but they train each other, and they're going to train our allied forces in these places to fight tyranny. That was a great idea, but it got perverted. And now Special Operations Command, your average 10 guys, they cost more money than two battalions. You know, your average 12-man, you know, team. So it's like, we kind of lost our way. You know, you got to win, but you got to be able to fight the next battle. Remember the whole thing, maneuver warfare? We were there at the base school in ISC was, you know, you got to be able to fight so you can win. It's not an attritionist thing. So you can fight again the next day. We're just throwing money at stuff. And,
right.
You know, money's something we could use better than the way we're using it over there, I think.
Okay,
I'm not saying leave there, but I'm saying, hey, we got to fucking achieve some kind of victory. And they're the key part of it. And the reason they're not doing it now is sheer will. They don't have the will to stop being dope dealers. They don't have the will to really root out the enemy and deal with it. And, you know, they don't have the will. And we got some other problems. So I heard General Mattis say to Pakistan, hey, look, Pakistan, you got to help us. You guys are a big reason there is a problem there, which, of course, is absolutely true.
Right.
And one last thing I just want to say. We're fighting Afghanistan. We're chasing people in Iraq and now in Syria. The two countries that are responsible for the murder of all those Americans on 911, you can lay at the doorstep of Saudi Arabia and Pakistan. And we ain't done shit to them except give them money.
All right. We're going to do one more segment, not today, but in the future.
Okay.
And I want your solution to Syria. I want your solution to Syria, Iraq, essentially. And then I want you to relay out in steps what you would do. And you can't recock anything. Going forward in Afghanistan, how you would get us out of there.
And that's the hard thing. You got to deal with somebody else's mess. You're absolutely right.
Right. All right. As always, thanks for the visit.
Thank you, buddy.
No, the one and only, the brilliant one, Jeff Kenney. Maybe, maybe not. All right. more of Auburn Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.